We learn to practice nonviolence one step at a time, one choice at a time, one day at a time. This is how each of us, in our own way, move the world in the direction of peace. This is the season for nonviolence. The thought for today is dreaming. Martin Luther King Jr. had a great dream. What is your dream for peace in your life? What one thing can you do today to honor that dream? This message is brought to you by the Association for Global New Thought and Greater Good Ministries Radio. For information about nonviolent programs, practices, and activities, visit ggmradio.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
How is everyone this morning? I'm Reverend Nancy Becker, and I want to welcome you to Wake Up to a Brighter Morn here on Greater Good Ministries Radio, where we are so pleased to bring you programming and music that is all inspiration all the time. I'm so happy to be here with you this morning, and I hope wherever you are that you enjoy a wonderful beginning to your brand new day. Now, we have a special guest joining us today on Wake Up to a Brighter Morn, and I'm so excited that he's going to be here with us, and his name is Art Jones, and he's been an EMT, that's an emergency medical technician, and a paramedic for, well, 38 years now. And he's going to talk to us about how we can help save a life. Now, I certainly look forward to talking to Art later on in the show, and I'm sure you are just going to really enjoy him. But for right now, let's make this a truly great day and a great beginning to this beautiful day. And to help us do that, let's start right off by gathering all that great chi energy with our deep breathing exercises, our 9 circle of life breaths. So, to get ready, let's all stand up tall. And if you can't stand, you can also do this sitting down. Either way, just make sure that you have enough room to stretch your arms out at your sides in a T position, and then bring them up in an arc that's going to go straight over your head. Now, here is a hint. When doing this exercise, you don't have to cup your hands together. Hold them loosely. Let your fingers be a little bit loose and just a little bit of an opening there. And when raising your arms out to the sides and straight up over your head, try to keep the motion as graceful and easy flowing as you can, so as not to disrupt the chi, but to gently gather it. Okay? Ready? Let's begin. Stand up tall. Feet shoulder width apart, head level, and try to keep your tongue to the roof of your mouth throughout the exercise. Now hands down at your sides and fill your mind with beautiful, peaceful images like you're at the beach with the waves gently washing on shore,
or in a mountain meadow filled with colorful wildflowers gently swaying in a warm breeze. Or even in your own backyard, listening to the birds chirping and singing, whatever makes you feel relaxed. Now when you breathe in, I want you to breathe deep and bring all that good air right down into your belly and fill your belly till it actually sticks out. We will inhale through our nose as we lift our arms, palms facing out, and arms out at the sides and moving up in an arch-like movement, straight up and hold high over your head. Palms now facing, but they're not touching. Hold for a few seconds. Okay, now as we exhale with our mouth closed and exhale through our nose. We bring our bellies in and try to make your belly touch your spine. This cleans all the organs. And as we exhale, we keep our arms outstretched and slowly bring them back down. And now hands coming to the front, palms facing but not touching. And done. That completes the first circle of life breath. Okay, hands back at our sides and ready for the next breath. Now, only 8 more to go. And now that we know how to do it, we'll go a little bit faster and maybe a touch more easier. Ready? Okay, circle of breath number 2. Stand up or sit up straight, arms down at our sides, and begin to inhale through the nose. As we inhale, arms are moving straight out at our sides and in a wide arc moving up over our heads, and we are filling our bellies full of all that good oxygen and cleansing air. Okay, at the top, palms facing, we hold for a few seconds, and as we slowly exhale through our nose, we bring our bellies back, arms coming down and to the front, palms facing, completing our circle of life breath. Now, hands back at our sides. Ready? Now for breath number 3. Okay, inhale, arms coming up and out of the sides, bellies filling, arms moving in an upward arc into the top of the head, palms facing but not touching. Hold. Now, slowly exhale through the nose, bringing the belly button in to touch the spine, and hands coming down into the front, palms facing. Done. Well, that's great. Now for breath number 4. Okay, inhale, arms coming up and out at the sides, bellies filling, arms moving in an upward arc into the top of the head, palms facing but not touching. Hold. Now slowly exhale through the nose, bringing the belly in to touch the spine. Hands coming down to the front, palms facing, and done. Oh, that's great. Okay, now for breath number 5. Okay, inhale, arms coming up and out at the sides, bellies filling, arms moving in an upward arc into the top of the head, palms facing, and hold. Now slowly exhale through the nose, bringing the belly button in to touch the spine. Hands coming down, finishing that arc, coming down to the front, palms facing, but not touching, hold, and done. Wow, that's great. Hands back at our sides. Now for breath number 6. Inhale, arms coming up and out of the sides, belly filling, arms moving in an upward arc to the top of the head, palms facing but not touching. Hold. Now slowly exhale through the nose, bringing the belly button in to touch the spine. Hands coming down to the front, palms facing, and done. Oh, that was wonderful. Okay, now for breath number 7. Everybody ready? Okay. Inhale, arms coming up and out at the sides, belly filling, arms moving in an upward arc to the top of the head, palms facing but not touching. Hold. Now slowly exhale through your nose, bringing the belly in to touch the spine, and hands coming down to front, palms still facing but not touching, and done. Fabulous. How are you doing? You feeling good? No stopping now, only 2 more to go. Okay, now for breath number 8. Inhale, arms coming up out at the sides, belly filling, arms moving in an upward arc into the top of the head, palms facing but not touching, and hold. Now slowly exhale through the nose, bringing the belly button in to touch the spine, and hands coming down to front, palms facing but not touching, and done. Oh boy, that's fabulous. Okay, now for the last one. Now for breath number 9. Inhale, arms coming up and out at the sides, belly filling, arms moving in an upward arc into the top of the head, palms facing but not touching, and hold. Now slowly exhale through the nose, bringing the belly button in to touch the spine, and hands coming down to the front, palms facing, and that's wonderful. Now, as you have your palms facing, I want you to take all that energy that you have gathered throughout all the 9 circle of life breaths, and just gently move your hands back and forth. Feel that energy. Work it into a beautiful ball. Circle your hands around it and bring it up, up to your chest and into your heart. Fill your body with all that good, cleansing, healing energy. Just feel so wonderful. Thank you for joining me for our 9 circle life breaths.
Wow, I feel absolutely fabulous. I just love doing that. And I know I say this all the time, but it's absolutely true. I do this every single morning. Even on the weekends, there's no cheating on this. And it just helps to cleanse the body of all the toxins that accumulate during the night. Wonderful feeling. I hope you all enjoy that. So, now that we are all refreshed and toxin-free and awake, it's time to light our positivity candle. And today, I'm using the essential oil of sage for its calming influence, and eucalyptus for its bright, fresh aroma that will wake up our senses. Now I will light the candle. There we go. There it is. Oh my, that is just beautiful. Fills up the whole studio. I love that smell. Well, Greater Good Ministries is a non-denominational ministry, and I invite you all, whatever your religion, your faith, or your belief, to join me now in a prayer to our Creator. Let us pray. Dear God, we ask for your gentle guidance today and every day. We seek your blessings to help us to meet whatever challenges come our way. Give us the courage to accomplish all that we set out to do today. Help us to show kindness to those in need. Help us to be generous with ourselves, our time, and our gifts, so that we may share them with those less fortunate. Help us to share even a smile with those we meet today. We ask that you guide us and help us to take care of this good earth, that we each do our part in whatever small way that we can to clean this earth, our home, and to care for all the living creatures that share this beautiful planet with us. We thank you, dear God, creator of all that is, for giving us this new day and new beginning. We seek your blessings, and we thank you, dear Creator, for all that we are and for all that we are yet to be. And so it is. Well, now I'm very excited. I want to tell you just a little bit about my guest. His name is Mr. Arthur Jones. And yes, he's been an EMT and a paramedic for about 38 years. But don't let that fool you. He doesn't look old enough to have had all that experience behind him. It must be his good, clean country living. And he's currently the coordinator of Network Initiatives for Rural Health Community Network Systems. Wow, that's a mouthful. But I hope I got it all correct. Well, welcome, Art. Are you there?
Good morning. Yes, I am. Thank you.
Well, did I get that all right?
Yeah, Rural Health Community Systems. It is a mouthful. And
yeah.
I'm the coordinator of Network Initiatives. We like long titles, I guess.
Well, you accomplish a lot with that long title, too. But
well, we try
about,
to.
Yeah, I'm sure that you do. How about giving us just a little bit of the background, or a lot of the background, on what you do and
how
you even got into it. You've been an EMT, so you go out on the ambulance calls, and a paramedic all these years. And actually, what made you get into that?
Well, I was 17 I've always had an interest in first aid. And taken the Red Cross first aid courses and had helped neighbors and I belonged to the Boy Scouts at the time and was the one they came to when we had injuries out on the camp. And so I was always interested in first aid. But what really pushed me into it was a very tragic situation I was involved with. We were helping a friend put a septic line in. And his older brother was operating a backhoe to dig the trench. And somehow when we were down in the hole, his young daughter, I think she was 2 or 3 at the time, got under the backhoe, and he didn't see her. And when he moved it, he ran over. And so
oh
it was kind of a crisis. And, I mean, I felt absolutely helpless. Did what people do. I panicked. I was the one who went to make the call. I couldn't tell the squad where I was. And it was one of those kind of life-changing moments that I never wanted to be that helpless again. And so I started taking more courses, and at the time, Modern EMS was just getting off the ground, and I was fortunate that I lived across the street from our fire station. And we had a very well-respected emergency squad in Greene that had been in existence since 1947, so long before a lot of ambulance services were started. And these members of the squad were just absolutely respected in the community for what they did. And so I went over and got involved with them. I was their victim for training. And
that
was
the
start of
my
EMS career. Yeah. And the victim I always liked to play was the dead one. Because then I could sit there and watch what else was happening.
And you can learn.
And I could learn. You know, where if I was a patient, I saw such a small segment of it. They'd pull me out of the car or, you know, do the splints and transport me to their field hospital. But if I played the deceased person, I got to stay on the scene and see what was happening. So it was quite educational and really got me hooked.
You started this at 16. That's such a young age to be so involved in something like that. That's such a serious endeavor.
Being involved in this tragic situation where the little girl did die. I mean, it was a mortal injury, you know, that it really impacted me. And like I say, that I wanted to move on. And the modern emergency medical services system was just getting off the ground. I guess everything lined up that really picked my interest, and I took off with it. And I grew with the system. It's been an exciting career. I really have lived the history of the modern emergency medical services system.
So how does that work?
Well, give you a little history of the system.
Before
modern EMS, in many communities, it was the funeral director who provided the ambulance service. And in many cases, there was no training, and all you needed was a driver's license, thus the term ambulance driver, which we're still trying to shake today. But it was an untrained position. The emphasis was put the patient in the back of the ambulance, which was generally the hearse that they put a red light on for the transport.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Yeah. Very primitive. And race to the hospital and hope the patient was alive when you got there. And in 1966, there was a national study done, Accidental Death and Disability, the Neglected Disease of Modern Society. It was a study done by the National Academy of Sciences and the National Research Council looking at traumatic deaths of young people outside the hospital. If you can remember back in that time period, the cars were gaining in popularity and kids were driving fast and they were dying of traumatic injuries.
Absolutely.
And it looked at the emergency health care system we had in our country, and the findings of the study were that we had an atrocious emergency health care system. As I said, the funeral directors were providing service in some communities. In other communities, there wasn't service. You called around until you could get an ambulance out of a municipality or else put them in the car and go yourself because you weren't going to get an ambulance. And then when you reached the hospital, the care was lacking. I can remember the early days of having to ring the doorbell at the emergency room while we were doing CPR on a patient and wait for the nurse to come down from the second floor to let us in.
And, emergency rooms weren't even fully operational at that time.
They weren't fully operational. The physicians who staffed them were general practitioners, the family doc, and generally they were called in from their office to come see the person in the emergency room. I can remember when the emergency department started putting on permanent physicians, sometimes you'd get the podiatrist or the gynecologist. No one didn't have any experience in treating heart attacks and trauma. And that's what this study highlighted. The Vietnam War was going full blast at the time, and it said that a soldier in that third world rice paddy stood a better chance of surviving an injury than we did in our own backyards. And that was the birth of our modern EMS system. This white paper highlighted the many shortcomings of our emergency health care system, and it was the catalyst to develop what we have today and was the birth of the profession of paramedics.
I see. You know, I remember, I'm older enough to remember back in those days, but I thought we were so modern at the time.
Seemed to be.
It's so hard to look back now and realize how much we lacked as far as medical care was concerned, especially where emergency medical care is concerned. and how far we have come. And how wonderful
really,
that you have been involved in all of that.
It's been a very exciting ride. And when I look back on it, I remember when I joined my emergency squad back in Greene, New York, we had Cadillac ambulances. And they were putting
wow.
the Cadillac ambulances. And they were basically built on a Hearst chassis. And they raised the roof a little bit, but they were dedicated ambulances that we had. And we could do little more than basic first aid, and that was cutting edge at the time. And I remember that it was a big deal in the community when we were able to get two-way communication with the hospital. Because it used to be we'd put them in the back of the ambulance and show up at the hospital door. Surprise, here we are. And that one of the first advances we made was to be able to have two-way communication with the hospital so we could call and give them a heads-up as to what we were bringing in so they could get the care ready for when we came through the door. And I look back on that now, and boy, it was primitive.
That was. At the time, we didn't think so, but of course, like I said.
At the time, it was state of the art.
Yeah.
The art wasn't very, very advanced.
Wasn't very advanced.
Compared to where we are today, I also had the privilege of being on one of the first rural squads in upstate New York to get involved in Hartmobile service back in 1979.
Really?
And, that's when we bring the shock, the defibrillation out to the patients to administer to them wherever we found them. And I think at the time we carried five or six different cardiac drugs, and that was huge back then. Now today, as a paramedic, we bring that and so much more, 45, 50 medications that we carry on the ambulance, advanced procedures that we can do. And I look back at those early days of the Hartmobile, and that was pretty primitive. But at the time, it was huge. We were right on the cutting edge of technology.
Art, can you just tell me a little bit and tell our listeners just a little bit about the training that you need in order to become an EMT? And then I guess the paramedic is the next one up from an EMT?
Yeah, there's several different levels of training that are involved in the New York State system. Several states have gone to having EMTs and then paramedics. New York State has a couple of levels in between. The minimum level to get into this is the certified first responder. They don't transport, and they go in and provide probably the most needed care, airway management, begin the resuscitation until the transporting ambulance arrives. And in our area, we have several communities serviced by one ambulance, but we have first responders who go out ahead of the ambulance, get called out at the same time to provide that immediate life-saving care until the ambulance can get there. The next level is the EMT, and that's a 140-hour course. And so
that's a lot of training.
It's intense.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, they also have to do CPR certification, and we have to keep that up annually, and we have to renew our EMT every 3 years. And so in some cases, you can renew it through a continuing ed, and in other cases, you have to go back through a recertification course. Then the next level in New York State is an EMT intermediate, and that provides a little bit more invasive care in that the intermediates can do endotracheal intubations to put tubes into the lungs for patients to breathe for them and also start IVs. Then the next level is the EMT critical care, and that's a 150 to 400-hour course. It can vary a lot depending on the where you take the course and what local medical directors will allow the squads to do, but that allows medication administration, some more advanced procedures. But then the highest level of training that's recognized statewide and is actually follows National Department of Transportation curriculum, so it's a national curriculum that is taught, is the paramedic. And to become a paramedic, you have to be an EMT first, and then it's about 1,100 hours with all the coursework, the clinical rotations we have to do, and it's 26 credit hours for the core curriculum through the colleges. It's usually taught through a community college, and it is a degree program that you can go on and get a degree in paramedicine. And so that's pretty intensive, but it is bringing life-saving care out to wherever we find the patient and is a part of what the modern EMS system is versus the days of old where we race the patient to the care. Now we bring the patient, bring the care to the patient, stabilize them, to take them into the next level of care, or take them even to a specialty center such as a cath lab or a trauma center.
My God.
We make that decision for transport is where they're going to be, outside of the hospital, where you used to be in the past, you went to the local hospital and they were supposed to fix it all. And we recognize that the local hospitals are great points for stabilization, but then you have to get them off to a specialty center. So if the situation allows, we make that determination at the time of transport. So it's quite an involved and sophisticated system, highly trained providers out there providing this care.
The training that's involved to me is quite amazing. And to think that most of the people who do this are volunteers.
That's correct.
I know we have trained professionals, thank goodness we do, and they're paid professionals. But when you go out into the rural areas, there's mostly it's volunteer people who do this, huh?
That's very correct, and very dedicated people to provide this care in their community. Otherwise, the care probably would not be available because the ambulance would be coming from a population center to provide care in the rural area, which was the way it was back in the 60s. That used to call into the city to try to get an ambulance to come out into the country. In New York State now, we do have ambulances districts defined for all areas of the state, so we know who's going to be covering the area, and in the rural area, it is the providers who cover this. And I'm one of those providers now. That I'm a volunteer with my fire department and rescue squad in Painted Post, and when we get a call, my pager goes off, I go to the station, drop what I'm doing, hop on the truck, and go to the call. And that's the way it is in most rural areas, that the EMTs with the ambulance will be provided by volunteers. Paramedic care will probably be provided by a career person coming from a larger agency. That evolves simply because of the amount of training it takes to become a paramedic. It does kind of reach a career position. Plus, to keep your skills up, you need a volume of calls to be able to practice your skills. So in the rural area, especially like in our area in Steuben County, we can take one paramedic in an intercept car to cover probably half a dozen volunteer ambulances with the EMTs to bring the advanced care out when it's needed. But the backbone of our system in the rural area is our very dedicated volunteer providers who take the time to go to the classes, go to the training, seek out additional training, and run the ambulance service.
It's quite an organization. It takes so much for it all to get organized and pulled together. Who does that?
That's what it does, and that's where we come in, Rural Health Community Systems.
Right.
As a rural health network, we're one of 35 rural health networks in the state, and we're the only rural health network focused on supporting pre-hospital emergency medical care. For years, the ambulance services have been out there by themselves. Support varies depending on the location from county government, but as far as helping them with the day-to-day tasks of running their organizations, they've pretty much been on their own. And it certainly has become much more complicated, and it's tough for them, especially the rural volunteers, to stay in the loop for changes and updates and develop the administrative side they need to make their organization viable. And that's what we do at Rural Health Community Systems. One of the many things we do is we help our local squads with administrative development, management, development, the important things to keep your organization viable and running efficiently, and also help them with bringing out technology such as electronic medical records. Emergency medical service is kind of on the edge of healthcare, and in many cases, rules and regulations don't always get down or were forgotten when these rules and regulations are passed, and one of them is electronic medical records, is that we are affected by that regulation that I believe says in 2015 all healthcare providers have to be doing electronic medical records. There's really no one out there helping EMS make this transition. Within the healthcare community, there's organizations helping hospitals and doctors' offices, but EMS was kind of forgotten. And so that's what we're doing, is helping our squadrons to Bend County make the transition to electronic medical records. We obtain a software program for them in collaboration with our regional EMS program agency to allow them to submit documentation electronically. We also help them with training needs. We have a computerized CPR training program where the mannequins are plugged into the computer that we can take out and set up squad for those members who maybe can't make a traditional CPR class because they work swing shifts and off hours, and so they're not available when the class is offered. So rather than lose this person as a provider, we can take this computerized system out and they can recertify on these required skills, CPR and advanced cardiac life support, using training mannequins.
I've seen that operate in operation, and that is amazing to me, that the way that technology has progressed, even as far as the mannequins are concerned. I'm used to the ones where you have to lean over and push down real hard, and you just pick them up and carry them away. But the ones that are now hooked to the computer, they can actually tell you if you're pushing hard enough, if you're pushing fast enough. They can monitor all of that, can't they?
That's correct, and it, again, is designed around research for adult learners in finding the benefit of the interactive learning, in that you're getting immediate feedback as you're conducting the skill. And the computer will talk to you as you're doing the skill that, push a little harder, push a little slower, or I love it when you get it right because the computer gets excited that, oh, you are doing well. And, that kind of feedback is encouraging to the
Everybody
student.
Everybody loves the compliment.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's
very
wonderful.
Positive.
That's wonderful. You know, Art, we're going to have to stop just for a moment here. I have to take a break for station identification. But you hold that thought, because when we come back, I understand there's a whole program that you're working on there in Steuben County. And I'm sure everybody would love to hear about it. Plus, we still want to hear about CPR and how we can save a life. So you just stay with us, and we will be going to a station break. So stay tuned, everyone, and we will be right back.
Welcome to WGGM, Greater Good Ministries Radio, inspirational music and live uplifting programming, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Join us at home, at work, and on iTunes. All inspiration, all the time. Our program is being brought to you by ShotNet Web Hosting. Reliable web hosting for everyone. Feature rich, reliable, and affordable. Create your own site in minutes with ShotNet's easy-to-use site designer. Monthly plans available that fit any budget. Visit shot-net.com. That's shot-net.com.
Wow, that's fabulous. Welcome back, everyone. This is Reverend Nancy Becker, and this is Wake Up to a Brighter Morn. And here with me today is Mr. Arthur Jones, an EMT and paramedic and coordinator of network initiatives with Rural Health Network Systems in Steuben County, New York. And he's explaining to us all about the EMT system, the paramedic system, and he's also going to tell us today about a program that they are working on. And I believe it's been done across the country also here in the United States, but it's something new that they're working on this year. They've started it here at Steuben County. So, Art, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, great. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yes, we're very excited about our latest project that we picked off, which is 10,000 Links in the Chain of Survival. We designed it around the Chain of Survival, which identified four critical links in someone surviving a sudden cardiac arrest. And those links are early access to care, early CPR, early defibrillation with the shock, and early advanced care, the paramedic level care. Research has shown those four links need to be in place in order to give someone a chance of surviving a sudden cardiac arrest. We, as the Rural Health Network, have designed some of our projects in the past around strengthening different links in the chain. We did a paramedic integration project early on with a local hospital to allow paramedics to be based at the hospital to assist the emergency room staff and improve communication between the physician and the paramedic when they were going out on calls. Another project we did was to place the automatic external defibrillators, AEDs, in law enforcement vehicles in our state. We did a pilot up in Wayland, New York, which is a little town at the very north end of Steuben County, with the New York State Police up there to put defibrillators on the troop cars. That pilot has now gone statewide so that we have all of our marked troop cars responding to medical emergencies with our EMS services with AEDs. This fit the nature of what law enforcement does. They're all patrolling, and especially in the rural area, they're on the road in their cars patrolling. We get a call, our pager goes off, we have to go to the station, get our ambulance and our rescue truck, and respond to the call. We've had several situations where our law enforcement colleagues have literally been a minute down the road when the call went out. We're able to arrive on the scene, administer the shock, and restore pulses by the time we could get there with our ambulance. So that's proven to be absolutely life-saving. Our Steuben County Sheriff's Office is also a big participant in the program, as well as the Village of Bath Police, that they all respond on medical emergencies with officers trained to administer this life-saving shock. And we have many people in Steuben County, and kind of lost track of the number now, but it's getting up there, well over two dozen, who are probably alive because of this immediate intervention.
And that's what I was going to ask. How many people, I have read numbers where it was up to, oh my gosh, like 300,000 people a year can die of a heart attack before they ever reach a hospital?
That's correct. It's one of the leading causes of death in our country is heart-related illness. And in some cases, the 300,000 number is what I've seen also, that suffer sudden cardiac arrest, where they're talking to you 1 minute, and next minute they're down on the floor. It can be amazing how fast it hits. I remember one situation I responded to that he was the owner of one of the local car dealerships. Apparently must have felt it coming on because he stepped out into the parking lot. We found him face down in the parking lot with his hands in his pocket. It hit him so quick he never had a chance to take his hands out of his pocket. And,
oh, my gosh.
So it hit just that fast.
That's how fast.
Talking to you and having seen this in the ambulance, they're on the cot talking to me, and all of a sudden, boom, they're in cardiac arrest. One thing I've seen, though, in my career and what the research is now supporting is that CPR can save lives. It buys time. The patients that I've been able to save, who, when we received the call, were in cardiac arrest, had somebody doing CPR on them when we arrived on the scene. If they were just laying there waiting for us, the outcome usually wasn't very good. But if somebody got involved and we're doing CPR, we stood a very good chance of being able to resuscitate that patient. And that's what our latest project is, 10,000 Links in the Chain of Survival. Our goal is to train 10,000 people in Steuben County, 10% of the population, in CPR in all of its various forms, but especially at kind of the awareness level, the bare-bones CPR, which is chest compressions only.
Really? No breath?
No breathing involved, and there's been a lot on the news the last 3 weeks or so about the research that is strongly supporting the benefits of chest compressions only. And so if you wind up in that situation with someone in cardiac arrest, start pushing on the chest. Push hard, push fast in the center of the chest, and call 911. It's as simple as that. Research has shown we have stores of oxygen in our body. It's just not getting to the right spots. but it's important to get it circulated.
Okay,
and so
that's what I was going to ask you. What does CPR do? How does that help save the life? What does it do in the body that keeps it alive?
Well, in sudden cardiac arrest, the heart has quit beating for whatever reason. And it, in many cases, is due to a blockage in an artery, but it also can be an electrical disturbance in the heart that has disrupted the rhythmic beating of the heart, and it's still sitting there quivering like a bag of worms. And the cells are still trying to beat, but they're not in unison, so no blood is circulating. So chest compression circulates blood in the body doesn't really replace it. The research I've read is that at best we can circulate about 20% of the normal blood flow that the heart would push, but it's enough to keep the brain and the liver and the other vital organs oxygenated so that death doesn't occur. And until we can get in there to restore the normal heartbeat, which is where the defibrillation, the automatic defibrillators come in. It's so important to administer that shock as soon as the condition exists, but that chest compressions only can buy a lot of time. So we're trying to keep the blood flowing to the vital organs until we can restore the pump to its normal rhythm, the heart.
Right. Now, can anyone learn CPR? Can anyone do that?
Yes, they can. I would encourage everyone to learn. I am passionate about this because I have seen the benefits. As I said, I've seen in my career as a paramedic that the patients we save, somebody was doing CPR when I walked through the door. And so I encourage everybody to learn this because you just never know when it can happen. In many cases, people sometimes find out they have a heart problem, and the sudden cardiac arrest is the first sign that they've got something wrong with their heart. You know, if they're lucky enough, they might get some chest pain or something before that, but it's a fair number of people that find out they have a heart problem when all of a sudden they experience sudden cardiac arrest. And it can be anywhere, in the office, at a sporting event, at a restaurant. You just never know where it can hit. And we would encourage everyone to at least learn chest compressions only CPR to be able to buy time until EMS can arrive. And it's very simple. We're using a kit put out by the American Heart Association and Laerdal Medical called Family and Friends. And in under half an hour, you can learn this life-saving skill of chest compressions only.
Really? That's amazing. That's fabulous. So someone can buy that kit, take it home to their family, and everyone can learn?
I know you can get the kit from the American Heart Association, but what we're doing as a World Health Network is we have our local emergency medical services involved bringing the class out to the community. And so we come to gatherings. I just did 90 sixth grade students at the middle school here in Bath. We did a senior group last week. I will be doing a class with the Bath Village Board tonight. So we are trying to make it very grassroots. We bring it out to the community and conduct the training using the American Heart Association DVD and an inflatable mannequin to practice the skills. And in under half an hour, we allow you to experience that absolute life-saving skill and develop a skill with it in this class.
So the people who live in Steuben County are very, very fortunate that you're doing this, that you have this program going. So you can go in, if they have a group or if it's a church organization or something, you can actually bring the equipment into their meeting and teach them all at one time.
That's correct. And it's good for our local EMS, rural EMS as well, because it allows them to have contact with the community they're in turn looking to for support. And it's also allows for questions and them to relay their experience as the local CPR experts. Who does CPR in the rural community more than our EMS providers who respond with their ambulance and first response units? So they are the local experts, and they're able to share this life-saving skill with the community that they serve.
That's wonderful. That really is. And for a county to have this available to them, the whole county. And did you say your program was looking to train 10% of all the residents who live in the county?
That's correct. 10%
wow.
of the population. It hopefully will put someone who is willing to do the skill in the right place with someone who might need that skill applied to them. The more people that are trained in CPR, the better the chances are that someone who needs it will receive it. And it does have an impact in systems and communities where they have the whole chain of survival in place with a strong component of the early CPR access, citizens trained in CPR. They're seeing survival rates of 30% plus, where nationally
That's wonderful.
The survival rate is 3 to 6%. I mean, so sudden cardiac arrest is not dead, and that's one of the messages we're trying to get across, is that this isn't a life-ending event that we used to think it was, that with quick intervention, people stand a good chance of surviving it. And the skill that we're teaching is also the same thing that an enhanced 911 system, such as we have in Steuben County, would encourage any caller to do if you called in and said, I have someone unresponsive. They would try to teach you over the phone in the heat of battle where to place your hands and encourage you to do the chest compressions.
Until the ambulance arrives.
Until the ambulance arrives.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're looking to give people an opportunity to learn this before the heat is on.
Now, what would you suggest to our listeners? Because not everybody lives in Steuben County. Not everybody's lucky enough to live in the county where you're from. And we have people all across the country and outside the United States who listen to the show. What would they do to get something like this going? Or who should they call if they're interested in learning this? Do they call their local 911 center, or is there one place they can call to find out information on this?
They probably could call their 911 center, but don't dial 911. Use their administrative number. Save 911 just for the emergencies.
But
also get a hold of your local Red Cross. One of our training partners is the American Red Cross for Greater Steuben Chapter, and they're supportive of this and a partner in this with us. So and they provide the certification classes, and I know also they have a nice little kit that provides a DVD and a training device to practice CPR. Also get a hold of your local American Heart Association. They certainly are promoting this and are in the forefront of identifying the benefits of chest compression only. And then the other option is to get a hold of your local ambulance service or first response unit. They're and especially in the rural area, they're your contact for emergency medical care, and certainly you talk to them that they could probably hook you up with whoever might be running the program, or you could maybe give them a hand getting into it. It doesn't take a lot of time. It's not tremendously expensive for the kids, but it can really provide a life-saving skill. And so they would be another option to contact.
So with a little bit of training, it doesn't take very much, I gather, from what you're saying, someone could literally save someone else's life with CPR.
They really could. They really could, and I've seen it happen. The benefits of the early CPR, I just can't talk enough about it. One situation I'm aware of is several years ago, and a family was traveling with one of the parents, an older gentleman, when he just suddenly became unresponsive in the RV. They were fortunately by one of our troopers' barracks. They pulled into the barracks. Two troopers came out, got him out of the RV, and started CPR on him. He was, I believe, in his early 80s. And the ambulance got there. They were able to resuscitate him. He survived and left the hospital 5 days later and continued on
with
his family.
My gosh.
So another example that age doesn't necessarily mean the end in this acute event. Very treatable. Some situations it might need a pacemaker, something as simple as that, or an implanted defibrillator. The technology has gone that you can still have a quality of life after a cardiac arrest And it's just that acute event that if somebody doesn't intervene, you're going to be dead right there. So it truly does work. I've seen it work. The research is now supporting what I've seen on the street. And I can't say enough about people getting involved. I'm always encouraged, and when I pull up to a scene and see somebody's doing CPR, I recognize that early on that somebody has to start before the ambulance arrives. Somebody has to control the bleeding. Somebody has to start the CPR. Otherwise, I don't stand much of a chance of being able to help the patient. So this is a great opportunity with the Rural Health Network as another facet of my career to help get the word out and provide this the trainings to the community to save a life.
And this doesn't just relate to people who live in rural communities. People who live in big cities could also benefit from learning CPR because heart attacks happen so quickly that even in a big city, an ambulance can't get to you in time. And if CPR is started, you have a much better chance of surviving the event.
Absolutely. We know brain death occurs within 6 to 8 minutes of the heart stopping. We know that if we don't defibrillate them within 10 minutes of the onset of the event, that we stand a very low chance of being able to get them back unless somebody started CPR. It lengthens that window out. And even in the big city, the ambulance might have a four-minute response time to your location, but then what does it take for the paramedics to reach you? If you're on the third floor of a walk-up, it's going to be a couple minutes before we get up to the floor. It's the same thing we look at in paramedic care that used to try to race the patient to the care, but when you look at the time intervals, by the time you get them out of the house, put them in the ambulance, drive them down the street to the hospital, even if you're a block away, get them out of the ambulance, get them inside, get them over onto the hospital bed, and the hospital begins their care, a lot of time goes by. Our care is mobile and can be administered right where we find the patient, started immediately. Even in the big cities, it's important to start until the ambulance can reach you, until the paramedics can get to you.
Absolutely. Is there an age limit? Is there where you would teach someone CPR? How old should someone be? I mean, you can't teach an 8-year-old, right? They're not going to have the strength to do it. What do you think is a good age to start teaching? For those of us who have children, maybe we would want to get them involved too.
I certainly don't think it hurts to expose them to it. They might physically not be able to do the compressions adequately, but part of the message of the training is recognizing the emergency and calling 911. So even exposing to young children to this, and I know they get a lot of it in school now, that call 911, but it's also teaching recognize the emergency, because it happens so fast that it takes us a couple seconds to recognize what's going on, and we tend to minimize it. Oh, this can't be that bad. And so valuable time is wasted. So part of the training is somebody hits the floor, in a meeting and in an inappropriate situation, recognize that it's emergency, make sure you have someone call 911, and then get in
start
CPR. So young children exposed to that, it's a good message for them.
Especially the fact that they can call 911.
That's correct.
They certainly
call 911, and there's been many stories about children calling 911 and saving a parent or grandparent because they recognize the emergency and, okay, we don't know what to do, but we know we have to call 911 and get help coming. And even if they were willing to try CPR, they might not be able to push hard enough, but anything is better than nothing at all. You know, CPR done optimally is good for about 20 or 25% of normal blood flow. So maybe they're not pushing hard enough. Maybe we're getting 15%. It's better than zero.
Well, Art, this has been such a wonderful experience. I am so grateful that you came on the show and explained all of this to us. And I think that we have all learned an enormous about CPR and how important it is for all of us to learn it. We're down to just about our last 90 seconds here on the show. It sure went fast.
It sure did. I certainly enjoyed the time. And it is something that I'm passionate about. And
I can tell. We could feel your passion, and I think that's wonderful. That's what that's what keeps the program going, and I'm sure the people in your community are very, very fortunate to have you and people like you. And I know we have people like you all across the country who are so passionate about this, and we're very fortunate to have you. I thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It was a great time, Nancy. I appreciate the opportunity.
And I would want to let everyone know that Amanda Dowell is up next with Messages of Light, and she will be on at noon Eastern Time. And for right now, I'm just so pleased that you have all been here to join us. I hope you've enjoyed Art Jones as much as I have, and all of this wonderful information to know that you too can save a life with CPR. It's very important. And I want to say goodbye to you all. Thank you all, everyone in the chat room. We have people in the chat room who have been listening and commenting on this, as well as all of you listening out there. Art, thanks again for being with us.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate
this.
You're
welcome. You're welcome. And I guess now it's time. Goodbye. We're done.